This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm your host this evening, Jesse Billington, and we're back to review the 15th round of the 2025 Formula One season, the Dutch Grand Prix. To do this, I'm joined by Timo Alwers-Daly. How are you this evening?
Recovered, I think, is the appropriate word to use after that Dutch Grand Prix. I had my medicine afterwards, which was IndyCar, but I can't now rely on that for another 6 months because the season's finished. So if we have another weekend like we did in Zandvoort, I don't know what I'm going to do. Maybe go back and find some classic races, but recovered otherwise from a not boring Grand Prix, but not necessarily good Grand Prix either. There's a lot to unpack. How are you?
I'm also doing the same. I've sort of processed mentally what I watched on the television screens over the weekend and the information that it imparted. I too also enjoyed the IndyCar as a tonic in the evening and enjoyed Newgarden's win at home, which was nice to see. And yeah, just there's going to be a lot for us to go through here. I think there is also that gentle irony of the moment that a track is sort of in peril of leaving or sort of being moved on to, sort of alternating, it all of a sudden throws out an absolute banger and you go, this is why it should be on the calendar. And I don't think that this is down to the circuit. However, there were moments where we had actual on-track overtaking, proving that if you're wily enough and think about it hard enough, you can get these cars to go side by side. And with smaller cars, maybe Zandvoort has a case to stay.
I would question the wording of a banger Grand Prix, aside from the literal sense, because I think this will be something where more recent fans, to be generous and broad about it, will say that this was a brilliant race. It wasn't. It had a lot of questionable moments and dramatic moments that will look good on Drive to Survive, but in terms of what constitutes good racing and a good Grand Prix, both on and off track with some of the stewards decisions that we will get to, I'm sure, it didn't really smack of that's a good race. You want a good race, and I lasted about as long as I could there before making another IndyCar reference. You watched the Nashville race that we just had, where you had some brilliant side-by-side 200-mile-an-hour racing lap after lap after lap. If you want good close racing without it going wrong and going for moves that are a bit ambitious, that can still work. That is how you do it. This is not the way to necessarily go about it. And for me, it reminded me very much of the very first race of the season back in Australia of that happened and now we're going to move swiftly on. And I don't necessarily want Monza to be as dull as China because no one wants that. But I don't want this again either. I want Monza to go back to being what Monza is, which is pretty good generally. And even the boring or more less exciting, shall I say, races like 2023 were still better than what we got this weekend, it felt like. I'd rather take it a little close and we don't quite get the potential rather than just who threw a literal kitchen sink at some of the cars, it feels like, and just let's see what happens.
I get what you're saying. I think what you're saying is you want a race where it's about the on-track action when it comes to close wheel-to-wheel racing and good strategy and driver ability, not just things going pop and sort of cars.
I don't mind a little bit of reliability, but I don't like, I think it just all of the elements for this Grand Prix, the stewards getting involved in yet again wildly inconsistent ways with the reliability, with incredibly rookie errors from a range of drivers, just all left you as the Rowan Atkinson gif from when he was in the Mercedes garage those years ago, just frustrated and bitter and needing a tonic, like you say, to go and watch something else after and to go, oh, okay, we've not all forgotten how to go racing. We can still do it. Good, good.
You can have your excitement in Formula One, but it doesn't have to be sort of a demolition derby of such to achieve it, I think, is
Yeah.
what we're thinking about it or framing it. But we'll get into that as we discuss further, no doubt. We'll kick off, as we do, with our sort of team by team analysis. McLaren still at the top of the standings. Piastri stuck it on pole. We weren't really expecting that. Norris set a lap record on his qualifying run, and then Piastri went on just to edge it out by something ridiculous, like 12 thousandths of a second. It was close. Like I said, Norris qualifying next to him on the front row. Piastri would finish in first place, and Norris would DNF.
Did enjoy the fact that, and you can tell that Sky Sports F1 has been getting ever more biased throughout the year because there is potential for a British World Champion, and it's getting a little bit grating now. It was grating a bit before, but it's getting a bit more annoying of how much emphasis was being made on, oh, he's going to set a new lap record, he's going to set a new record. The excitement, and then 2 seconds later, Piastri just goes and does it and beats it immediately, and suddenly the volume on the significance of that is turned down slightly, and then on race day, you've got to make another reference to Lando doing this excellent thing, but then also having to just squeeze in at the end that Piastri did then immediately beat it. I found that quite funny, and maybe that's a conversation for another day about the media's presentation of drivers around the world and how certain countries are better at it than others, let's say. But back to McLaren, yeah, it was another race a little bit like Budapest, where I'm not convinced that Norris would have necessarily done much more than Piastri was able to in Hungary, for example. Maybe have a couple of goes down into turn one towards the end, but I don't know if you are on the F1 admin channel on Instagram, but supposedly we had a race long fight for first between Norris and Piastri up until his engine went pop, and I feel like Admin was watching a different race.
Yeah, I think the battle for the lead was different. I think Norris might have come back. He was better on his tyres across the race. He has been across the season, Norris. He's been able to better manage and sort of maintain his tyres. So he might have had a bit of tyre health towards the end. But again, such is the demand for sort of a delta in lap time to overtake around Zandvoort that you need more than just a bit of tyre life. So it's marginal, really, making that call. It's a great one to hype up if you're on a broadcast, if you've got to make things sound interesting. But I think,
Especially in a circuit where not much generally happens in the way of overtaking anyway, and you
yeah.
need to fill the time.
But when you're looking at it sort of in retrospect, so you can be a bit more critical about it and say maybe that wasn't something that was really on the cards. Ultimately, for between Norris and Piastri, this was a race that came down to luck. And I think that's the only real way you can toss it up. Both were on absolutely fine form coming out of the summer break. And I think personally, after what I said on the preview, I have a bit of humble pie to eat about Norris's approach to this. He came in a hell of a lot faster than we anticipated, really hit the ground running. And sort of, I wouldn't say he showed up Piastri, but he sort of, it was a shot across the bows for Oscar because he was like, oh, I've got to really still be on this. And ultimately, Oscar being absolutely on it did pay out. It meant that he had track position. He was able to have that sort of dominance when it came to the pit stop strategies. We saw Lando having to slow down so they could make the double stack work under the safety car. But at the, and it played out for Oscar exactly as he needed it to. And it was a case of luck because, of course, you can't predict, you can't strategize for your teammate's engine going pop. It'll be interesting to see what the cause behind that was because we've seen reliability issues with other Mercedes-powered teams this season. So there could be more twists in the tail coming this season. But for Oscar, I think the cleanliness of his execution this weekend is the thing that really stands out to me. This is the first Australian to record a Grand Slam and his first Grand Slam. First Australian to record a Grand Slam since Jack Brabham did it in 1966. So that's pole, win, fastest lap, and led every lap of the race. And I think that's a great way to sum up Oscar's approach to the season so far, is that sort of just clean sweep, straightforward approach of just do everything correctly. And I think that we're going to look back at the Dutch Grand Prix and say it's going to have been an important moment in the season when it comes down to that battle, whoever's at the top come the end of the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. And I think we're going to look back at the Dutch Grand Prix and go, that was important. And obviously, we're going to go, yeah, because Lando had his mechanical failure, but also I think it perfectly encapsulates Oscar's approach to the year as well. I think there's two sides to it.
You say about luck, but I think while that does play a factor, you've got to remember the point you also then made of Piastri didn't make a mistake either. He was right there across the weekend. And when it came to crunch time, Q3, he was where he needed to be. Started the race, made a very aggressive move to cover off Lando. Max obviously was going to be Max and do his thing. So Oscar knew that while he would have to maybe defend from him a little bit, he could also rely on Max to keep Lando busy for a couple of seconds so he could move up and deal with his business. And then, like you say, he just didn't put a foot wrong all race. So even if Lando's engine hadn't gone off, I still don't think it would have mattered ultimately. Piastri would have still won that Grand Prix, and that never really looked in doubt. He's now equaled, I'm using the Mark Webber's number of Grand Prix wins, and you're talking about Grand Slams. He's the first McLaren driver to get a Grand Slam since Mika Häkkinen in Monaco back in 1998. So all the nice little records that he's helping to shatter, and what's that, three of significance, four maybe, across a weekend when Lando essentially is just going to be remembered for his engine went pop here. And I think that's potentially the third big moment of the season that will stand out at the end of the year so far. The first one being Australia, that classic moment of the two of them sliding off, the next one being Canada, and then this being the third. And it'll be interesting to see how many more of those we get. He's 34 points now ahead of him. That's a nice margin, because if he does have a mechanical issue or just DNF randomly, he's got a Grand Prix in his back pocket now if he needs it to still lead. And that is lovely for him with what, nine races to go. And not that you want to need that, but you'd rather have that than not. And yeah, absolutely clinical from Piastri. And yeah, Norris definitely came out maybe swinging a bit harder than you definitely thought, and I probably would agree with that, but it's still not enough. And even if he hadn't retired, I don't think he was going to get past him one way or the other. So he would have had to rely on him having a mechanical issue there or something going wrong there, which when you're going against someone like Oscar Piastri, that's rare to hope. That's more of a Ferrari thing of hope is now the strategy that something will happen to my teammate so I can beat him. Because I, even though I'm doing nothing wrong myself, Lando was doing a very good race up to that point. There's nothing he can do.
Yeah, it what yeah, hope is not a strategy. And we say, yeah, like you said, we say that about Ferrari a lot. And I think sort of when you've got two drivers so closely matched, that's sort of what it leads to, trying to sort of find the difference between. But I think it was a close run thing between them. And I think there's you can discuss it as until the cows come home, who was really going to have the upper hand. But it relies on that if, and that great Murray Walker line of Formula One is just if backwards. And you're sort of, yeah,
I
you
miss Murray Walker.
You get nowhere with that sort of discussion. I think we can say that both were driving at an absolutely phenomenal level. It's just unfortunate that these are technically demanding cars. These are sort of billion element in, assembled by incredibly intelligent sort of mechanical team things. The nature of them is eventually something will go wrong. You have that many moving parts, you have that many technical elements to them, something goes wrong eventually. And I think that this was almost an inevitability. You don't run a season that clean, that free of sort of mechanical failure without something eventually going wrong. And also, given how hard those two were driving their cars, they were pushing them to the absolute limit. Eventually, something goes wrong. But that's by the by. We might well see some more Mercedes issues as the year progresses. Speaking of issues, somehow still in second place in the constructor standings. Ferrari, Hamilton qualified seventh, Leclerc qualified sixth, and both would DNF.
I think it's still quite impressive that they've had essentially two races now this season where they haven't gotten any points between the pair of them. They're still second. It's just the amazing power of Ferrari to somehow both impress and crush us at the same time. Bad luck, I think, for Lewis ultimately. Gutting for Leclerc, especially after that brilliant overtake on Russell. And I'd have been so annoyed if that had turned into something more. The fact that they'd even got noted in the first place, that overtake, I thought was just The first, possibly, of many. I can't. I say of many. Definitely of many. I don't know if it was the first because I can't remember the order that they all came in. But of the stewards getting involved where they didn't need to, or in the wrong manner. That's my definition of wrong, perhaps. But I suspect you may agree with it here and in other places. It was just such a ballsy, opportunistic move that worked. And you bet your bottom dollar, if that was reversed, Russell would be going, "Look how smart I am for having pulled that one off." Another track where every 5 seconds someone says it's very difficult to overtake here. Don't then go and investigate an overtake just because it was a little bit balls to the wall. You want them to race hard. You want them to, push the limits to an extent, and that was just on the line. That wasn't Antonelli later on, which we'll get to. That was. I can make this work, and I trust the other driver enough to give me just enough room for it to succeed. I think the silver lining here, though, for Ferrari is that yes, they did both DNF for very different reasons.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
But the improvement across the weekend from start to the respective points in the Grand Prix was quite good. The strategies would have actually worked for once, so it's bloody typical that they then just get taken out essentially. The racing gods just weren't on their side, but I think there's more positives than negatives, despite the obvious negatives at play this weekend. It's just you've got to look for them.
Yeah, I think Ferrari are still now very openly running with the issue they've got where their car is just set up. It is built, designed too low. They've got that skid wear issue, and I think that played a huge part into where they were struggling to find pace this weekend. And I did.
Aston Martin too, I think Mike Pratt came out and was saying they were having a play about with that over the weekend because they didn't want to get DSQ'd essentially for that, the reason that Ferrari got disqualified in China. So it's interesting that it's multiple teams at play there.
Yeah, multiples. I think teams are incredibly aware of it as an issue, but Ferrari seem to be the only ones that are, let's say, compromising their setup to avoid it. And we saw this in Hungary. We saw that Charles Leclerc's sort of tyre strategy and the tyre pressures he ran was hugely important to actually keeping the car off the ground. And I think I've said it in the preview that this was going to be a huge thing that drove their approach to their weekend at Zandvoort. And it looks like it did because the pace that we anticipated there being in that car just wasn't there. And there was some great racing from Leclerc, those ballsy moves, especially up the inside of George Russell, I think it was at one point, absolutely phenomenal. And yeah, unfortunate that his race just came to blows with Antonelli. It was a rookie error from Antonelli. And we'll get to him. We talk about Mercedes, but both cars looked skittish across the weekend. There was a bad setup. They were running high. They were running high pressures. They were running sort of a very disjointed layout of the car. And I think the result of that meant that it was tricky to handle. And I think that is partly what resulted in Lewis Hamilton's shunt, as he just didn't have the grip he needed. He couldn't get the car to turn in. He couldn't get the car to turn on. And yeah, the car just walked him up the banking. And at that point, too close, it had stepped away from underneath him, taking him up towards the wall, and just where it kicks in at the end of that banked section of turn
So it was
two.
unfortunate. It was just that bit at the end. He could have got away with it if that bit just didn't jut out. And it was like,
Yeah.
oh, you, ah, oh, so
He'd
close.
done well to catch it. He'd done well to get the car back under him. But the problem was, he just ran out of time and space essentially at that point. And it's an unfortunate thing. But that's the nature of the car. And I will say there is a strange parallel to, if you go back to, I want to say the 2019 German Grand Prix, where Seb just had his car walk in wide and spit him into the barriers there. And you start looking at it and going, ah, oh, this is.
Or his season slash career ending shunt to the wall, you mean?
It was the one that essentially wiped Vettel out of title contention that year as well. And you're sort of looking at it going, oh, I've seen this story before. I don't like the ending. But I want there to be different for Hamilton. However, he does now have the unwanted record of the most races at Ferrari before scoring a podium at a Grand Prix. And yeah, to compound problems, he's also got a penalty heading into Monza for not slowing down under yellow flags on his way to the grid. Five place grid penalty. And again, that's not necessarily.
I mean, I know this isn't the point that you're going to make there, but I'm just also amazed that they didn't have enough time, considering how slam dunk those sorts of things are. You either did speed or you didn't under those circumstances, but they decided we'll have to take a look at that after the Grand Prix. But bear in mind, the Grand Prix is not even started at this point. My guys, you've got nothing else going on for a minute. You can't just go, yeah, you did that penalty. Done. You've got to wait for afterwards for that. It's just yet another mind-boggling thing from them, and I'll be surprised if Lewis cared particularly about that after the Grand Prix. Going, yeah, fine, whatever. That should have been obvious from the start. He probably looked at them and went, yeah, I'm going to get a penalty because he's been around enough to know that. So,
But
but
also at the same time, speeding under yellow flags, where's the team communication saying that? This is the
well, yeah,
communication breakdown at
we
Ferrari.
said we talked about this in the in our summer break episode. We're reviewing them as like one of the again the fundamentals. Why are they still not managing to get some of these things correct? I think the only silver lining, aside from the fact that they've got the improvement was evident over the weekend up to that point, was what was definitely an unintentional mistake, but a hell of a save in FP1 from Lewis. If you saw that going into turn three, he essentially did a full 360 going around and then just carried on as if it was all planned and went. That is how you try and take the Monaco smooth operator away from Carlos Sainz if ever you were attempting it.
I think Lewis has got he's got a better understanding now of the car, of the chassis, of the way that car feels, because you've got to look at the drivers that can do that sort of 360 style spin, catch it and just set off again. And the only other one that springs to mind is Max Verstappen. That's sort of a Max Verstappen move all day long, a Red Bull he's incredibly at home at. So you see Lewis being able to sort of pull that level of awareness control sort of concept off with the car, and you go, okay, he's getting up to speed, we're seeing what we want to see. And it sort of leaves you going, ah, oh, this is a weekend of what could have been.
Does
Hopefully,
make me think that
Monza's
he's
going to
learning
set
that
this up.
he's not trying to drive the car like a car anymore. He's trying to drive it like the prancing horse that it is, and he needs to find a way to tame it.
Yeah, driving it like the fidgety animal that it is, and not sort of a sleek, smooth Mercedes that he's used to running. But we'll get to more Ferrari, I'm sure, at Monza. I need to try and figure out how the hell they're going to set this car up, because that is a. I think they're lucky that Monza is a low downforce circuit, their home race, low downforce. You don't have to worry too much about that skid block underneath the car wearing, even at high speeds. But we'll get to that in due course. Meanwhile, we have Mercedes. Russell qualified fifth, Antonelli qualified Q11, knocked out in Q2. Russell would finish fourth, and Antonelli would finish 16th.
Russell, no notes generally. He's just going about his business most of the time. We touched on him briefly when we were talking about Charles Leclerc just now. I think if it was reversed there, he would have been quite chuffed with himself. So I think that's just racing drivers being racing drivers. Antonelli, what on earth was that move? It was an absolutely rookie move from him. And I mean that in the most uncomplimentary way possible. Because. Oh, just what was that? There's ambitious and then there's ambitious. Toto said after the race that he wants a monster in the car and he wants Kimi to go for moves. Fine, but on what planet was that move ever on? I don't think, aside from some of the chaotic stuff we saw, what was it, last year or the year before, where everyone was all over the track every 5 seconds. We don't see any kind of overtaking in that corner because it doesn't work. We saw drivers attempt it in F1 Academy over the weekend and it didn't work for many obvious reasons. And if you want to try and make a pass on a bit of the track that it's not seen at too often, do what Ola Lloyd did. Do it down into T6, T7. Do what Charles did on George. Heck, maybe just do it down into turn one like everyone else. Why try it on turn three? And I just think I know Toto's got to have his driver's back, but is he even believing some of what he's saying there? Because that's just that wasn't on, and yeah, I don't know how that. I mean, again, I don't know how that only got a 10-second time penalty. That's something we're definitely going to talk about with Williams and the situation there in a minute. But you took another driver out. I don't care if it was deliberate or not. I mean, again, IndyCar reference coming. You had Louis Foster accidentally take out David Lucas in IndyCar on an oval going close to 200 miles per hour, and he got a drive-through penalty for that, which for IndyCar is quite harsh because they normally don't do penalties of any kind because they just like to get the racing over with and let racing be racing. But how was that not, at least in F1, worth a drive-through penalty? How was that not you're having a drive-through or a stop-and-go or a combination and you're going to be demoted a couple of spots for your next Grand Prix? I don't understand how that's the same as what we have for Sainz and Lawson, which we'll talk about them separately, but as equivalent, they aren't equivalent. There's no.
The Antonelli one baffles me. And again, they always say that, oh, we never do penalties based off of the outcome of the action that we're giving the penalty for. And I'm like, okay,
Maybe you
sure.
should.
But most of the time, you're only saying that in defense of the fact that someone made a stupid move and wiped out someone else's race. It's fair enough if you've wiped yourself out in the process of it. Fine. You've penalized yourself by removing your chance of scoring points. But Antonelli essentially sort of functionally got off scot-free with that, without ignoring
And
the
if it
time.
wasn't for the last race restart, he could have got away with still finishing, what, sixth or seventh up to that point. That's hardly a penalty for wiping out another driver.
Especially when you consider sort of the places he has finished, that would be sort of like a huge sort of redemption against his finishes this season so far. So you're sort of left going, ah, oh. You're just left feeling a bit hollow. And yeah, it is an incredibly rookie move, and you're right to call it that. It is, however, his rookie season, so there is obviously some sort of amnesty for that. But at the same time, when you, Toto Wolff, have hyped this guy up as the second coming of Jesus Christ the Almighty, he shouldn't be making those sorts of moves. He raced here in Formula 2, I think, last season, and he should know that you can't make a pass down the inside. He would have watched Dorian Pain in Formula 1 Academy, his essentially Mercedes stablemate, and realized you cannot make a pass down the inside of turn three.
Can't do that in a small car. What about if I do it in a bigger one? Maybe
What
that'll work.
if I do it in a bigger car that's more susceptible to losing traction at lower speeds in colder, wetter conditions? What if I try it now? And what if I watch drivers lose places for trying the low line on lap one of this Grand Prix and think, you know what, I'll give it a shot, and then catastrophically understeer into the guy ahead of me, wipe him out from the race, and somehow get away with it? Essentially, a 10-second penalty in the grand scheme of what you can be awarded is getting away with it. So it's a 5-second. You can drive around a 5 or 10-second penalty. We've seen people drive around 10-second penalties before, just go
Max
run
did
out
it,
of
what,
lap.
two races ago?
Yeah, just keep your foot in and just go quicker for a bunch of laps until you open up a 10-second window. It's not unheard of to do, and a good driver, a good team, a good strategy system can work around that. A 10-second penalty is an inconvenience to you because you've inconvenienced someone else. You blocked them in a corner, you made a double move, fair enough, 10-second
I'm
penalty.
terribly sorry. I've absolutely wiped you out of the race and destroyed front half of your car. Oh well, I'm
Oh
going to get
well.
on with my day.
I'm going to the stewards are simply going to mildly inconvenience you and let you get on with your race. So I think there's the stewarding this weekend was gash, and we'll get onto it when we talk about Sainz and Lawson as well, I'm sure.
Do
But
have a question for you though with Antonelli and the situation. I don't for a second think it'll happen, but it's something that is worth chewing over. Obviously, both drivers don't, as far as we know, have contract extensions in place yet. They are still contracted into the year, but no further. What if Antonelli isn't there next year? What if they have a relationship with another team with a driver that is doing very well in, like, say, Alex Albon at Williams? Would you be entertaining the conversation? And I don't know if I'd want to see it because I love the idea of Albon being there when Williams build up their team and get back, and he's doing brilliant things there, and I love the loyalty. But if you don't replace Antonelli with Albon, for example, Sainz isn't doing enough to warrant it at the moment. You're not going to put another rookie in there. Who would you then? put into that second Mercedes next year if you are going to replace him, because you can't take Bottas now because he's gone. I don't think he's going to be tempted back. Who is there?
Vesti, is he
Yeah.
available still?
Rookie though.
Yeah,
Yeah, he's had some experience in it. My only other thought was maybe you switch because of the new relationship next year, you switch Gasly and Antonelli around and you put him in a top team and you see what he can do when he's not a top team that's Red Bull. That's something I could see for a season or two and let Kimi do all of his colapintoing at Alpine
next to
with
Colapinto, yeah.
yeah.
Whether Colapinto is there or not yet to be decided as well, but we'll get to that again in due course. Yeah, the Mercedes one's odd because if you're, I want Albon to be there for that Williams revival. They're on a great path as it is at the moment, and his driving, as you'll see if you watched lap one, go find the Alex Albon on board from lap one. He
Great.
is not, he is no slouch. He is absolutely firing on all cylinders at the moment, and you don't want to take away the chance for Alex Albon, who's had such a sort of turmoil-filled time in Formula One, that year on the sidelines when he was punted from Red Bull, coming back, going to Williams, and having this resurgence of form and everyone going, oh, he was good. And even Red Bull going, he's good now. And you start to
They're
think,
having that twice this year now, with it's just happened a bit later with Albon.
yeah, you're sort of left going, sort of, oh, I want Alex to have like his moment in the sun, having really put in the graft himself. And we've seen him doing that at Williams, and I want him to have that. But I would be interested to see what he could do in the Red Bull and the Mercedes. That would be interesting. But yeah, it's one of those things like, what the hell do you do with Antonelli at this point? Do you just accept that this year is going to be a bit of a scrappy one, and possibly next year as well, when you've got this new setup of car coming in, and just essentially for the kid,
He's
write off?
going to cost them a lot of points, and you think Red Bull are somehow, despite growing one-handed, not a million miles away from Mercedes. And if they keep hemorrhaging points, Max finishes better than George does more often than not. So if Antonelli loses them P3 and potentially P2 in the standings, and Ferrari can just eke out that gap, that's going to be an interesting conversation that I would not mind being a fly on the wall for at all.
I mean, despite.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know, when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself, talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
The car's best efforts this weekend, Yuki Tsunoda made it up into the points. If he's able to start stringing those performances together again, just nipping away a point or two here or there, he's going to be a fly in the ointment for Antonelli. Because all of a sudden, Antonelli, if he's not scoring those points, is going to be a pain for Mercedes. Because if you've got Max regularly outscoring George, and you've got Yuki regularly outscoring Kimi, Red Bull are going to start to eat into Mercedes' points gap. That's, and all it could
And
take.
so, it's not a massive gap, and it would only take 2 or 3 points here and there, which is the thing, because it's one of those awkward, I say awkward things. It's one of those slightly amusing things, rather, where you look at the placing of the two drivers in the championship, you go, how the heck are they competing with each other? But you look at the overall standings, and you go, somehow it's like Aston Martin on a different scale. It's like, I don't understand how you're there, despite having watched all of this unfold in real time. It takes further examination, but maybe that's a good segue for talking about Red Bull.
Yeah, the Red Bull one is a very interesting argument because Verstappen qualified third, great outing in qualifying, finished second. Tsunoda qualified 12th and would finish ninth. And he'd worked his way into the points on his own merit before Lando Norris had his retirement. So he was getting a point, which I think was interesting. But yeah, I'll let you go first because I think we're going to, as we always do, have a discussion about Red Bull.
Clearly, Verstappen's quite easy because he just continues his podium streak at Zandvoort. And yeah, he just does Verstappen things. I did love the little Scandi style flip from him to snatch P2 early on. I mean, he snatched it immediately and then kind of had made it more difficult for himself. But it's that kind of aggressiveness that he has, Piastri has, and Lawson has as three examples from this weekend that show why they are the drivers that they are and why I enjoyed that kind of driver more than the other kinds, I think. Tsunoda, yeah, he got his first points in a Grand Prix or in anything, actually, I think, since Imola. Was good. It was good for him. He needed it, quite frankly, let's face it. But he was overshadowed by both Racing Bulls in qualifying, got knocked out by Lawson, and then Hadjar gets a podium too. And we've talked before about the difficulties of that car, and he had a couple of those this weekend after his final pit stop, critically. But in a qualifying heavy season where it seems that that's more important a lot of the time than the racing, I'm surprised that, and maybe they are, and it just isn't working, that more focus hasn't been put on that from his side of the garage. Let's just focus on nailing qualifying and then just making the car wide like Alex Albon can and focus on that. And maybe that's the way he would then somehow keep his seat. Because you've got to think, if Lawson and Sainz hadn't had their coming together, there's no reason to think that they would have dropped out the top 10. Whilst he worked his way up there, he did have the advantage of Lando DNF'd, two Ferraris DNF'd, two of the drivers that were in the top 10 in Liam and Carlos were comfortably outside of it. So it's half a dozen one and half a dozen the other. Like, it's good that you finally were in the position to take advantage of this, but up to that point, it was still a bit touch and go there. And with Ben's P6, the awkward thing for him now is that he gets points for the first time in, what, since April, May time, and he's now only better than Colapinto overall in the championship. And he had an extra six Grand Prix this season over Colapinto, which, somewhat amusingly, is where he got the majority of his points, which, yeah, make it that what you will as well. So it's good, but he needs to repeat this now, or like I say, focus on the qualifying and make sure that, and the team needs to make sure they don't have any of these random throttle map issues playing in them, because that's not going to help things either, especially if you're then in a fight with Mercedes potentially for P3 in the standings when you definitely weren't expecting it to be.
Yeah, it's not great for Tsunoda being down at 19th, but at the same time, he said, yeah, he had a load of cars leave ahead of him, but he also had other cars move past him and fill those spaces as well. So, but also, yeah, there was a cars moving past him. You had Albon come past him. You had Behrmann come past him in the Haas as well, which is a really interesting one
And
to talk
Stroll, I
about.
think, as
And
well,
Stroll as well came
of
from
all
all the way back,
people.
yeah, from 19th to points like seventh or something ridiculous. You're like,
Seventh,
why
yeah.
did you do that? Sort of a brief moment where he forgets that he's Lance Stroll. But yeah, it's
He's remembering that far too often, but we'll get to that.
yeah, it's the Tsunoda one is difficult because I don't think he's a qualifying driver. Everyone goes Charles Leclerc, fastest guy over a single lap, and you're like, yeah, that checks out. He is when the car is able to be set up correctly and he's on it, he is one of the quickest guys over a lap. I think Oscar is getting close to really challenging him on that. Like the fact that Oscar can just lock into 140% for one lap, and you're like, oh, that was ruthless. Tsunoda is long form. He's race ready. He looks at like sort of doing, he's doing two or three stints, and he just doesn't have the click for qualifying, I don't think. And we've never seen him qualify brilliantly either. He's never been a qualifying driver. He's always been a do it in the race driver, but that falls short.
Now we can't really rely on that at all.
Yeah, you can't rely on that at all when you've got this absolute pig of a Red Bull that then in its final stint decides to go, oh, we're not turning off the throttle map from the pit lane. Best of luck, sunshine. Everything comes in after 40% throttle travel. You're like, okay, that's not handy at all. So he had an uphill battle this weekend, I think, Tsunoda, but he points from it. It just sucks that he scored points but has gone down in the standings as well, just because of the amount of chaos.
It seems such a brilliant way to
Yeah.
surmise this season.
Yeah, you've scored points. Congratulations. You've gone backwards in the standings. Yeah, you're only just ahead of the other Alpine. You're sort of going, oh,
It's very much the porn star sort of thing of here's what I like and here's the best thing I can offer you. And you go, I don't like that. That doesn't seem fair for me.
Yeah, you look at where he was in Belgium, he was 17th, Hungary 18th, and now he scores points in the Netherlands and goes down to 19th. And obviously that is impacted by Behrmann having his best career finish to date, which rockets him from 19th to 16th. And yeah, all around him, I don't know who's, yeah, he's Bortoletto is kind of close to him on points. Let me just check out what Bortoletto's
So
on.
yeah, I think
Bortoletto's 14,
Porto's got
2
14
points
points
clear.
or something. So
And then Behrmann is on 16, Sainz is on 16. So it's close around that area. It only takes Tsunoda to score 4 points and he climbs up a good few places. But
yeah, but that's kind of
that's
relying
still
on the
puts
other
him in
drivers
15th.
also not to score points.
Yeah. Yeah. And these are drivers that are
So
reliably getting into the points. Sainz, not necessarily, but Bortoletto and Behrmann, yeah. And yeah, it's career end, I think, for Tsunoda at this point, unless he goes to another team. But I can't see him.
I can't see who would want him, and I can't see how he keeps the seat when you've got Hadjar doing that well. You've got Lawson, the guy who replaced, knocking him out of Q3, and you've got the likes of Iwasa and Lindblad waiting in the wings, and at least one of them, I think, personally, I would leave Lindblad for another season and put Iwasa in so that he doesn't get forgotten, just to see what he could do for a season. But when you've got all of them around,
The
yeah. Good luck.
worst part for Tsunoda is the fact that he spent so long helping RB develop a really good tame car that is to his liking, that he can drive the absolute demon off of, and then he gets taken away from it. He's gone, well, hang on.
Gets taken away, but also is on the record with saying, yeah, I can do this and I'm ready for the challenge and I'm happily going to throw myself
It's a
on
double-edged
this. And
sword,
everyone's
yeah.
going, you see how sharp this sword is, right? You
Yeah.
see that.
He's
You see
sharp
that you're
on
not
both
wearing
sides.
any armor.
Yeah. But at the same time, sort of going, you know that scene in Mad Max Fury Road where he's tied to the front of a car and he sees his old car come barreling past him? That's Yuki Tsunoda watching his RB
Watching Liam
barrel
Lawson.
past him. But not necessarily Liam Lawson, but just watching the RB that he helped develop barrel past him to the podium, thinking that should have been me. Because I think in another universe, Tsunoda, with the level he's driving at, would have been the guy that was up there with the car that he was comfortable with. He would have been able to get it up that sharp end. But we've sort of hobbled him, given him a broken car that
Not
then
in
breaks again. It's taken us several
thinking.
weekends to get all the actual parts he needs onto the car. And then when we do, the throttle goes, no. He's like, oh, he just can't catch a break. And it's again, that Red Bull seat is career suicide.
So, but in classic Top Gear words, it's he didn't.
Yes, it was ambitious, but rubbish. Speaking of ambitious and somehow pulling it
Not
off
rubbish.
on, yeah, not rubbish, certainly for Albon, Williams. Albon qualified 15th and would climb 10 places, most of which seemed to be in that opening lap to 5th. Meanwhile, Sainz qualified 9th and tumbled back down the order to 13th.
Albon, and I was thinking this, and I think Sainz is definitely worth a conversation, not necessarily today, but more generally if the trend continues. But Alex Albon is consistently spanking Sainz this year, and much more so than anyone I think dared would have thought of the potentially Alex Albon who knew he had it in him. It was Williams's first top five finish at Zandvoort since KK Rosberg and Derek Daly in 1982. He's doing some Oscar Piastri level records here, and I quite like it. Sainz, on the other hand, yeah, there's going to be a very interesting conversation one way or the other, I think, at the end of the season. But what confused me about him here in the Grand Prix in particular was he knows how to do battle with aggressive drivers. He's been around the block a few times. And he also wasn't ahead at the apex when he was trying to get past Lawson, as per the rules that he also knows quite well. So Lawson had every right to defend and defend hard. He is an aggressive driver. We've seen that in many a Grand Prix over his short career so far. And he's also been where Sainz has been and kind of annoyed about it, but understanding because that's just how it is. So I feel like Sainz should have known better there and should either have seen what was coming because. He know he's saying about, oh, I'm going to go against a driver that doesn't like to play fair. But, well, if you know that, why are you not acting accordingly and then going, oh my God, we've made contact. Like, if that was Max Verstappen, you're not surprised that's happened because that's Max Verstappen. So she either should have known what was coming and reacted accordingly, or just waited until the start of the next lap and tried again in the obvious spot. It seemed, yeah, maybe more of a racing incident, but I would have also said more on Sainz than Lawson, because Lawson was always going to move back over to that part of the racing line after defending. Sainz, you would think, would have done the exact same thing. So for Sainz, I think he could just go past him, kind of Chloe Chambers-esque, and then wonder why I'm out on the gravel, is a bit befuddling for me. 10 seconds, in the moment, I was satisfied with that because I just thought, you've been in a bit of a muppet there, fine. But 5 seconds maybe would have been better. And I think if 10 seconds is what we're doing for taking out a car, then either keep the 10 seconds for Sainz and then relegate Antonelli to Formula 4 India as a punishment. But, it's that balance thing coming back into play again. And I think that one was, it was either too harsh or the other one wasn't harsh enough. And I think somehow it's both. And I don't know what I'm happy with anymore. And that's why I'm so frustrated at this Grand Prix this weekend. It's these two main things I feel like.
On the Alex Albon front, and like you said, he's consistently spanking Sainz this season. Going back to what I did say about Charles Leclerc, fastest driver over a single lap last year, when obviously he and Sainz were teammates, average qualifying positions, according to my data, Leclerc would average qualifying position of 5.2, Sainz 5.0. So it's a close run thing. Sainz is a very fast driver. And again, when you look at their finish positions, Leclerc would finish a Grand Prix on average in fourth, and Sainz in 4.6. So we're close. We're talking about two drivers that are absolutely rapid. And I think it's worth considering, or you can't not at this point consider that Alex Albon deserves to be in that conversation and deserves to be a part of that discussion when you go, we need an absolutely rapid top flight driver. And if you're looking at Charles Leclerc, you must equally at this point be looking at Alex Albon, because of the way that Albon is absolutely decimating Sainz. And if you're going that Charles and Sainz were pretty much toe to toe the entire time they're at Ferrari, but now you, and I don't think Sainz has gotten worse since moving to Williams. I don't think his skill or his ability has dropped off, but you've got
He's just
Albon
finally
that.
found a car that is not easy to get on top of as quickly as he's used to, which is interesting because it's on the one hand, you could make the argument of, oh, is it just more potato to Alex and it's kind of a Red Bull problem? Or is it just Carlos has finally come across the one kind of car that he isn't able to drive that well? And I think next year will be the key there, providing everyone stays where they are. Or at least signs like I don't see signs going anywhere, but I'd be interested to see how that changes driving style, because if he's on it, like if it takes everyone a few Grand Prix to get up to speed with the new cars, with everything going on, but then he's on it, then you go, maybe this generation just suits him better. But if it doesn't, then that's going to be another interesting conversation. And it's again, like, it, especially depending on who, or sorry, how Alex or whoever's in that Williams seat gets on in comparison.
Yeah, it's just gonna be one of those things that you've got to compare over time. But brilliant drive from Alex, and I think it's put him firmly in Red Bull's crosshairs. If they're looking for a decent driver to put alongside someone in that top flight team,
If you were Alex Albon and you going there though, you thinking, oh shit, not this
Isaac
again.
Hadjar, are you going there? Both of them are saying no, I think.
I'm playing rock, paper, scissors, winner,
Yeah,
winner or loser goes there, I'm not
the
sure.
loser has to take the second Red Bull seat. Yeah.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/arts. Just go to Indeed.com/arts right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/arts. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
For your Sainz, it's a tricky weekend. I agree with you on the penalties. I think that what Sainz was doing was fine, because Sainz doesn't deviate his line. If you go back and watch, and again, this was great that we had the IndyCar on straight after the F1, because again, IndyCar was at a bowl this weekend. Perfect, because we're talking about
driver's taking sort of lanes through a banked turn. Sainz doesn't deviate his lane. He's not ahead at the apex. He's not got front axle overlap, but he doesn't change his lane, which doesn't, and equally, you can't expect the guy going around the outside to just suddenly completely back out, especially when they're that far ahead.
No, I wouldn't expect him to back out. I was maybe expecting him to preempt that Lawson was going to try and cut him off and come across that way and essentially go up the inside a little bit. It's tricky because I'm never sure how much the distance is between that point and the turn, the next turn coming. But at the same time, then you don't need to back off a lot to have backed off either, so that you could still be within touching distance the next time you come round, you're there. Which is why, in hindsight, I think more of a racing incident. But I can see why Sainz got the penalty for it, even though 10 seconds now seems too much.
Yeah, but I think that you should have been allowed to contest them. I think the penalty should have more gone to potentially Lawson for trying to make that move up and trying to change lanes to a position where the car is, and he knows there's that car. And again, I don't want to sound like I'm his biggest fan, and I know that we have a contentious view of him, but Jacques Villeneuve made an interesting point over the weekend. He said that the drivers only use their...
Clearly ill.
The drivers only use their mirrors for defence. They only use it to check there's a guy there to block him off. And that sort, you can apply that, not necessarily directly, but you can apply that to Lawson, who would have checked his shoulder, seen Sainz is there, knows that he's got the inside and gone, I can do what I like. Sainz is getting the penalty. And no one's going to admit that. Lawson isn't necessarily going to admit that. And that's not a fault of Lawson. That's a fault of the rules and the way the rules are enforced.
I'm just going to call in the nurses so that we can get you committed to a mental institution for thinking Jack Villeneuve had valid comments to make.
It's a tangentially valid comment. The fact of the matter is that Lawson knew what the rules were, knew those rules of engagement, and used them to his best advantage. And we've seen that with Verstappen as well. The idea of just dive to the inside, get your front axle ahead, the corner's yours. But I think that around there, you can battle it out at least through turn two still. Like, if they'd stayed together and then raced it again, Sainz would have suddenly had the inside. He might have had the better exit because he had the higher line, had the drive out of the corner. We would have seen this battle go on for another turn. I think the problem is that Lawson started to move lanes.
Couldn't see that, knowing the rules as Lawson does and as Sainz does, and whether or not you agree with them or not, using them to your advantage like Max does, as you say, if you're Sainz and you're in Lawson's position, would you not do exactly the same thing and go, well, that I know how this is going to play out and it's going to be more in my favour than not, so why not do that and why should I risk it? So again, I put the blame on Sainz a bit there for not being smarter.
I think the blame lies with Sainz for not being smarter, but doesn't necessarily mean that he should get penalty points for not being smart enough for thinking that someone's going to race you fairly as opposed to utilise what every driver knows. And
depends how you define fair.
But every driver has complained about those rules, saying that...
But until they change, you're going to use them to the best of your ability.
But, potentially this was just a bit short-sightedness from Carlos Sainz there. But I think overall he raced well across the weekend, and he just was unfortunate that that's the way that that incident panned out. I think it should have been decreed a racing incident and left alone. Anyway, into P6 in the constructor standings, Aston Martin. Alonso qualifies 10th. Stroll qualifies 20th, moves up to 19th after Ollie Bearman starts in the pit lane after taking some power unit components. Alonso finishes 8th. Stroll finishes 7th.
We'll get to him. Alonso calling the shots, essentially making it work. He was annoyed at just about everyone, it felt like, over the course of that Grand Prix, and rightly so, and then dictated to the team what he wanted them to essentially look into, even though they claimed they were already looking into it. I'm not sure how much of that I believe, considering Aston Martin are still not quite on top of everything. And made it work. Like I say, it was quite nice to see that. And very strong weekend for him in particular from start to finish. And then also somehow for Stroll, despite his two crashes, which were just classic Stroll, he then somehow manages to finish ahead of Alonso, and everyone has watched the same race but is also still scratching their heads going, hey, have you done that? How are you there? What kind of voodoo magic is this?
Yeah, it's... I haven't been able to unpick the Aston Martin weekend yet because I just don't I don't know how they did what they did or achieved what they achieved. And yeah,
If it helps, I think they're probably in the same boat, and that's why, as much as everyone's looking forward to Adrian Newey coming in next year and designing a whopper of a car, I think even with a driver like Alonso and a designer like him, that's not going to solve everything. You still need to figure out how you've done what you've done at Grand Prix like this, and until you do, it's gonna you'll get maybe a top five every third or fourth race, but if you have no idea how heck you've done it, that's not going to be enough to be a championship campaign sort of deal. You can have the best car in the world, but if you've not got the rest of it, not going to help.
Yeah, it's that I just don't know what to make of how they achieved what they achieved this weekend. And it does, I don't want it to sound like I'm completely trashing Stroll for going 20th to or 19th essentially to 7th, because that does take some effort. It takes a good bit of
It was a
strategy.
good strategy.
Yeah. And you've got to have a reliable enough driver to execute that strategy. And yes, he was a bit messy and sloppy in that execution, but he executed it enough that he was able to come home with a decent set of points. And again, you look at how Aston Martin's season is lining up, and it's sort of gone from being a very sort of ropey one to one that's sort of started to resuscitate itself to sort of an alarming degree. Like we look back at, admittedly, Australia, a bit of an outlier. They started 5th and then immediately dropped down to 7th and had an absolute low of 9th come the Spanish Grand Prix as everyone else found their footing. But since then, they've just been sort of on this steady climb back. And you're sort of looking at it going, oh, okay, I don't quite know what you're doing. Admittedly, it's now been a bit usurped by the fact that they are only 2 points ahead of RB. And that doesn't mean Williams will be breathing a sigh of relief that Aston Martin have now got other contenders to deal with. But yeah,
It does feel like Lawrence Stroll has bought the keys to an amusement park that's been derelict for quite some time, and this is them trying to repair a rickety old roller coaster and going, hey, oh, hey, oh. And the O's are very worrying because it's a rickety old roller coaster and that could be quite calamitous. But then when it goes well, you get the thrill of a life. And the fact that they had both of those across a weekend just again leaves you scratching your head going, we should really look around the office again to see if there's a manual.
yeah, it's a very interesting one. I will say, actually, while I was just flicking over my spreadsheet to just sort of analyze Aston Martin's season, I did get quickly reminded of the fact that Alex Albon and Kimi Antonelli are tied on points, which is
Which
interesting.
was what sparked my thought for why are you not swapping them out potentially for each other in the
Yeah.
first place?
You've got these sort of two phenomenal drivers, one in a significantly better car than the other, but one of them has absolutely sort of stormed away when it comes to those points, both of them on 64 points. Interestingly enough, also Hülkenberg and Hadjar are now also tied on points, 37 apiece there as well. So they are pretty damn close. So it's interesting times. But anyway, that's getting sidetracked. Aston Martin, I don't think we've really got any more to say on it because we don't know what to say. Sauber, Hülkenberg qualified 17th, finished 14th, and Bortoleto qualified 13th, finished 15th. It's.
There's not much to say here because I think it's Sauber. I think
Yeah.
the only surprising thing is that we're surprised that they didn't do well, which is a good thing. And that's about it, I think.
Yeah, I mean, if we look at where their strong results have come, it's circuits that are largely well understood. So for Hülkenberg, Australia, points there, great. And then we sort of trundle along until we get to Spain. Hülkenberg bags in 10 points. Again, a circuit that he knows well and understands nicely. And then the same again for Canada, a circuit he knows well. Austria, again, well understood circuit for Sauber. That's where we get Bortoleto gets 4 points. Hülkenberg gets another two. And then the Silverstone, Hülkenberg podium, great. And then Belgium, again, a circuit that's well understood by the team and the drivers. 2 points for Bortoleto. And then again in Hungary, well understood circuit, one that Bortoleto would have freshly done through the feeder series, points. Then we get to Netherlands. It's a bit of a quirky one. It's an outlier for a team that's still struggling to rebuild itself, still focusing on other things. I think you can let this Grand Prix go if you're Sauber and just go, okay, we've learned from it. It's a tricky one to get the setup for. We'll move on. And it's the only way of looking at it if you're Sauber.
Which is wait for the actual moving on to the next bit, so there's nothing else to add.
Yeah, so we'll move on then, as Sauber might do, for to Racing Bulls. And Liam Lawson qualifies 8th, finishes 12th. And Isaac Hadjar qualifies 4th and finishes 3rd. And I want to
Does
say,
reiterate the Fred Vasseur comment from China or Bahrain around that point of season where, like, qualifying, it might be a qualifying season. The importance cannot be understated here. And yeah, you've still got to carry it through to the end of the race, but it does help. And he did an excellent job on Saturday. I mean, they both did qualifying wise. I mean, like I say, Lawson qualified in eighth, knocked Yuki out. I don't think we were quite expecting both racing wheels. Definitely expect Hadjar up there, which is mad to say at this point. It's his rookie season, but we're less surprised that he's up there. Maybe surprised fourth because that was a bit cheeky even for him. But yeah, nice to see Lawson there again. Shame that what happened there. But Hadjar to get on the podium, first podium for the team since Gasly back in Baku in 2021. That must be quite nice, and also a bit more of a salt in the wound sort of thing for Tsunoda, considering how long he's been at that team trying to get a podium. But yeah, I would have loved to see where Lawson would have ended up, but I think maybe not right behind Hadjar in fourth or fifth, maybe fighting Ollie Bearman for sixth. But I would be surprised if he dropped out of the top 10 had things played out. It'd have been nip and tuck with signs for the rest of the race, but I think regardless, they can look at that as a positive weekend. And yeah, Hadjar just now. Again, of all the rookies coming into the season, I don't think we would have put Hadjar giving Antonelli of all drivers a run for his money in terms of rookie of the year. But it's,
Well,
and especially those, I caught myself saying during the race, I'll go on Hadjar, and then realised, cast my mind my 12 months to my feelings towards Isaac Hadjar and Formula 2, and yours as well. We're going, oh, what a turnaround.
speaking of like our predictions when it came to Isaac Hadjar,
Yeah,
you
he's still
and
got a lot of damage to do to his car, hasn't he, according to me?
Yeah, according to both of us, we're both predicting he'll
Oh,
have
yeah,
the most
sure.
DNFs and he'll have the biggest damage bill as well. He's been pretty clean, actually. I mean,
He's, yeah.
he hasn't written off a chassis, I don't think, this season. He's a couple of
He's
wins,
had
a
a
few
couple
races
of
here and
things,
there.
like, I think Australia and Silverstone are the two main ones that come to mind, but apart from that,
But those
perfectly
are
fine.
front and rear wings. That he's not like
Yeah, nothing major.
chassis, he's not blown engines.
He's in for a rough night races if he's going to help us get some points.
Yeah, Battle of the Rookies. You had even a worse call there because you picked Doohan. I
I'm
picked
still
Antonelli.
standing by my man.
I picked Antonelli, as did much of the field, to be fair. I think the only really odd outlier to this was my girlfriend who picked Ollie Bearman. But again, he's having a pretty good time with things. We can't rule him out. But yeah, Hadjar got a lot of stick for from us in Formula 2. He was a bit too, I don't want to say energetic, but a bit too fighty, a bit too punchy, and took it to beyond the limit a couple of times. You even predicted that Lindblad would replace Hadjar at halfway, but we're now seeing said driver on the podium and even Helmut Marko eating humble pie about it. So it's.
Don't mind it when it does it like this though, because it's such a nice turnaround story. It's we've had two stories this weekend that have been somewhat feel good, and just that's why we enjoy motorsport, because you can take a driver like Hadjar, where he's in this interesting role that we put him in last year because of his on track and off track and team radio antics, and you've managed to turn him not quite into a nation's sweetheart, but into a driver where you're going, That Hadjar's all right, really. That kid's all right. You're kind of like the old weary policeman at the end of the cop film with the young rookie, and
You're
you're all right,
quite
kid.
good.
You're all right.
Yeah, it's gone from no, I destroyed the car, no, at Monza to sort of beguiled that he's on the podium, and it's lovely to see. And mathematically, it does mean he's still in title contention as well, ironically enough. Yuki
And
Tsunoda,
the
if he wanted
I
to
was going to
stay
say
in the
what.
title, Yuki would have needed to come P3, but ironically, it's Isaac in essentially a
It's
car
Isaac
that Yuki
Hadjar.
developed that has kept himself in the title fight. I think both Aston Martins are now out of the title fight, and I think Hülkenberg is also out of the title fight at this point. But yeah, it's
I did like that Hamilton as well in, I don't know if you saw, but in his post after the weekend did also put in a little congratulatory note to Hadjar, which Hadjar is going to absolutely love
it'll be
that he's
printed
getting
out
that
and
kind of
framed. Yeah.
publicity from those.
But there are some other important facts about sort of Hadjar's run, because it means that in one race he's scored more than the entirety of the second Red Bull car has done all season, which is a great statistic. And also the fact that if
I'm sure one that Red Bull absolutely deserves.
Yeah, and if you wind the clock back to the start of the year, they had all the drivers do those sort of like back to school like chalkboards.
I saw that.
And, like, the one thing I want to do this season is, and Isaac's was get on the podium, and you're like, ah, he did it. He did the thing. He's possibly the only person who's actually achieved like the thing that he wrote on his chalkboard. Anyway, but yeah, technically, Hadjar still mathematically in with a chance. We'll move on to two drivers. I don't think Ocon is in with a chance anymore. Behrman, long way out of a shot here. Haas, Ocon qualified 18th, finished 10th. Behrman qualified 19th, finished 6th. Good one for Haas.
Yeah, double points for Haas. Behrman's best career result to date and the third double points finish of the season for the team. So happy days all around, I think. And like I've criticised Antonelli and Tsunoda on before, this is what you need to be doing if you're a bit further down the order. You need to be placing yourself in positions where if something goes wrong up ahead, you are placed to take advantage of it and finish inside the top 10, and comfortably so if you're Ollie Behrman's. And also have a bit of this balls-to-the-wall strategy of why not give this a go? What's the worst that can happen? We're going to be exactly where we were in the first place.
Yeah, and I think I like seeing that from Haas because it shows that they're really engaging with the season, trying some different things and making the most of the final year of these regulations and giving it a shot. And I think that's what you want to see from those sort of back marketing.
It's a little bit like Williams in a way, and Sauber. We're not going to be doing an awful lot really this season, and we're not going to be doing too much with the drivers and the teams that we've got, but let's try and see what we can do and let's just try and learn.
Well, that's the thing that I really enjoyed about Verstappen in that opening move was the fact that he's just in it for the love of the game. He's not really in the title fight at the moment, but absolutely made a send round the outside in turn one, lap one, cold tyres. And you go, he's still there. He's still got this. And I'm incredibly excited.
It's almost as if he's mathematically out of contention for the title, but he's also somehow Piastri's teammate and he's just being a perfect rear gunner for him. And it's quite amazing to see him just finding ways to annoy Lando in that regard. And yeah, you see that with Haas and Racing Bulls to an extent and Sauber and Alonso. Why shouldn't we try and do this sort of thing? It's like we've seen many times in IndyCar this season, and we saw it previous weeks gone by in Milwaukee with Rasmussen. Just, I'm going to drive fast and I don't care who's in front of me because why should I? You're all fair game, surely. And if it doesn't happen, fine. But what's the point in just staying at the back and not at least trying something? What am I going to achieve? I'm here to race.
I enjoy the sort of trying something. And again, on it, it's giving it a go. It's putting in it's giving it a shot. And that's what the sport is about, is giving it a good run and seeing where you get to with it. Because that's what we watch it for, is everyone giving it their fair shot and seeing where it gets them. I think Haas, good weekend, an incredible drive as well from Ollie, capitalising on a bit of a rogue strategy, making up for the safety cars at weird moments, and yeah, coming through and coming out on top, really, which is a good result for him. Less good for Alpine. Gasly qualified 14th, finished 17th, Colapinto qualified 16th, finished 11th, ahead of his teammate, but there is more to it than that.
Yeah, it was quite amusing watching that play out because they kept swapping positions every 20, 30 laps or so, and then neither driver achieved what the other was meant to when they topped round and then they topped back again. And Colapinto just reminds me of Tsunoda here in terms of it's his best result and he still doesn't have any points. And you go, never mind, we'll try again next week.
Yeah, it's... You're just left looking at Alpine going, oh, I just don't...
I will say about them now what I used to say about Sauber. Still like their livery.
It is still a very nice livery, but...
They finally nailed that this year. They just didn't get anything else right.
Yeah, a lot left to be said. Which takes us then to our winners and spinners. This will be a very short section because we're in complete agreement. Winner?
Hadjar.
Good. Spinner?
Antonelli.
Job done. We'll move then into our predictions review.
0 points for pole position. No, I'm sure I got one for pole position because I predicted Oscar, did I not?
I thought you had Lando for that.
No, I think I went Oscar because I said he was going to come out of the gates running for this one. Yeah, I had Piastri.
No, I must have just had bird blindness.
Because it's 2 points for each of us this weekend, essentially, is the way it pans out. We both get a point for predicting the Piastri win, and then you get a point for getting Verstappen second. No one got points for fastest lap, and no one got points for their wildest predictions. Clearly, we both overextended when it came to Williams. But anyway.
I extended with the wrong Williams, essentially, and was just a bit too ambitious with that. But not too. If I'd had it for Albon, I'd have been fine. Maybe.
You said at least one Williams on the podium. And I mean, Albon was heading in the right direction. And I said Sainz outscores Albon, which, no, miles away.
No.
Formula One Fantasy Formula One review for Zandvoort. Itch Energy, 260 points, wins this weekend's sort of challenge. Le Victory, 259 points, close run thing. Catherine's Curse, 258 points. In fact, it's very close across the top three. The Cat Dads in P9, Champagne Macarons, P19, My Podcast Team, P25, F1 Main 1, P63. I don't know who they've got in their team. I'm not going to go and have a look. It's going to be
they had Ferrari and both Ferrari drivers, which didn't help them this weekend. I think one of them was on double points just to really hammer the point home.
Yep.
So it went well.
Yeah, don't do that, kids. Split your drivers, split your teams. Overall, the Ticlias, 2,910 points, leads the championship as it stands. Le Victory in second, 2,869 points, and Lando, 2,728 points. Catherine's Curse in P4, Big Reach P5, On the Curbs P9, Can't Grow Moustache P11, The Mixing Pot P18, and Kiwi Burners P63. Guessing it's still got Liam.
Your bottom dollar is not changed.
Yeah. Oh, well, someone's got to come last, usually an Alpine these days.
Oh, he's running away with it.
Yeah. Anyway, that's all we've got time for on this episode of the Undercut Podcast. We'll be back very soon for a preview of the Italian Grand Prix. In the meantime, though, Timo, where can you be found?
This week, I can be found over on the Tata Chronicle, where I've got an F1 Academy weekend roundup, and I've got a brand new interview out over on the Curbs Instagram with Turkish racing driver Selim Elbia. So go and check those out this week.
Beautiful stuff. And if you'd like more from me, you can, of course, read the latest issue of Classic Car Weekly. It'll be coming out about a day after this issue goes live. We've got a full review from the Silverstone Festival in it. Otherwise, you can find me on the internet as at Jesse on Cars on most social media platforms. Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok are all the usual places to go and have a look for me. Otherwise, like I said, we'll be back with a preview of all the racing action that's still to come at Monza. And we haven't even talked about F1 Academy, a great home win for both drivers in the sprint and feature race as well. But again,
we'll get to that. Read my review on Tata Chronicle. It'll tell you everything you need to know.
They are. Go and read Timo's review. Go and read his online work. We'll be back with a preview of the Italian Grand Prix.
Big color, bigger savings. It's Sherwin-Williams' biggest super sale. Get 40% off paints and stains October 17th through the 27th with prices starting at $29.39. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.